This is Dr. Jerry Loeb talking to you about fun, F-U-N. So we've talked about a lot of different things. We've talked about CPR, we talked about marriage, we talked about children, we talked about families. I'm going to talk a little bit more about families. F-U-N, like the word fun, can stand for a number of things. And number one, it just strikes me, fighting unhappiness and negativity with fun. So fighting is the F, and then U is unhappiness, and the N is negativity. To fight unhappiness and negativity with fun. And that means if a child is going through something difficult, and they're being negative, or they're unhappy, or they're hurt, or somebody had bullied them in school, or or someone in the house who's making fun of them, or they just want to do something and want to go someplace and you don't want to do it, and they're in a bad mood. So instead of like getting in a bad mood with them, instead of them getting angry at them, to fight it with fun, to joke around about it, to make family fun, to make a sense of family closeness, but also this idea of really having a simcha dikas, attitude with each of your children and with your spouses and really with your friends and with your kehila and whoever it is you're involved in, to be a person that smiles easily, to bring fun into the life of yourself and to have fun in the life of whoever it is that you're interacting with. So fun can mean fighting unhappiness and negativity. And fun could stand for feelings matter, which stands for the F, feelings matter, that the people's feelings in your life matter, or your own feelings matter too. And then understanding matters. The importance of understanding people in your life and to understand yourself. I'm going to talk a little bit about taking care of yourself now, the importance of self-care. The importance of you taking care of you. The importance of you taking responsibility for you. The importance of you making yourself a person that you like better, that you're proud of, so that your self-esteem can go up. So you can feel a sense of the importance of me. Not in a gaivadic way, not in an arrogant way, not in a way to put other people down, but in the idea of what's called self-love. The idea that Hashem loves each of us. No matter what, to take in that message that Hashem loves each of us, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. Hashem loves each of us unconditionally. He wishes we would do things always right, but Hashem knows better than us. Hashem knows better than us what's right or not. And Hashem knows what we're like, and Hashem understands us. Hashem is our father, Hashem is our mother. Hashem is Tati, Hashem is Mommy. To bring Hashem into it. And that's part of the part of the you is to focus on you, and the part is to understand yourself and to understand your relationship. To understand yourself, to understand others in your family, but also to understand yourself and to understand your relationship with Hashem. To bring Hashem into the picture. To really feel like Hashem is your mommy or Hashem is your tati. To feel it, to take it in, to feel held by Him. To feel held by Him. I'll always remember what my father used to say. My father was a Holocaust survivor. My father survived Auschwitz. He was there for a number of years. He lost a lot of people in his life. He lost 2 brothers and 3 sisters and nieces and nephews and both of his parents. I grew up in Borough Park, and I grew up in a community of Holocaust survivors. And one of the amazing things that I saw with my father was that even though he had suffered so much and he had lost so much, one of the expressions that he would say all the time, and it would really govern his life, and it was an expression I remember as a child walking to shul with him, and we would hold hands and I would walk to shul with him, and then he would say, "In the Himmel is a Vater." "In the Himmel is a Vater" means in the heavens there's a parent, there's a father. And it's such a beautiful thing because I was able to then take that with me throughout my life. In the Himmel is a Vater. But I knew that my father loved me unconditionally. And I knew that that's what Hashem was. Hashem was this father figure, this mother figure that loves me unconditionally, even when I'm not perfect, even when I'm far from perfect. Even when I'm far from perfect, for each of us to feel that way. When you look at the answer is going to be about family, but also fighting unhappiness and negativity. But I want the you to be you, each of you in this audience, each of you that's listening to this. The you means yourself, to self-care, to know that Hashem loves each of us, and to feel that love from Hashem, and to feel that sense of, and to take care of yourself in a positive way, and to pay attention to yourself. Not in a way that it's all about you, because your job as a mother is to be there for your children, of course, of course, of course, but don't lose sight of you. Don't lose sight of you. Don't lose sight of you. It's so important. I once spoke somewhere and I talked about what is referred to as the Kutzke goat story that I had heard, I think, from Emil Chotursky. He should have a full shalema once. And he said it in such a beautiful way. He said it in such a beautiful way. The Kutzke Rebbe once, towards the end of his life, somebody came and called him Rebbe, and he said, "Don't call me Rebbe." And they said, "Why not? Why can't we call you Rebbe?" And he said, "I'll tell you a story. There once was a goat that lived in the forest, and the goat had magical powers. The goat had a horn, and it was a beautiful horn. And at night, it would touch the heavens. The horn would grow, and it would touch the heavens, and it would make the stars dance. It was a magical goat, and it was a beautiful goat, and it filled this, and this person, there was a person walking in the woods, and he saw it, and he could not imagine, he saw the beauty of the goat, and he saw the beauty of the magical horn that touched the heavens and touched the stars and made them dance. And he said, he went over to the goat, and he said, and he took out his knife, and he said, "Can I have a little piece of that horn, that magical horn? Can I carve out a piece of that little horn? Take a little piece of that horn just to give me a sense of the beauty and the power and the mysticism of that horn." And the goat was kind, was a kind goat, and said, "Sure." So he took a little piece and then he left. And then he went and he made a snuff box out of it. But when he got back to the city, he showed everybody the beautiful snuff box that he had made from the goat's horn. And everybody said, "Where did you get that? And it smelled like heaven, and it was so beautiful, and it would seem magical." And they said, "Where did you get it?" And he said, "Well, I was in the forest, and I saw this goat, and I asked the goat if I could cut off a piece, and he said, sure." But the problem is that he told this, and word spread throughout the town until everybody ran into the forest, and each person, they lined up in front of the goat and said, "Could I have a piece? Could I have a piece? Could I have a piece? Could I have a piece?" And the goat was kind, so it always said yes. But then when the people left, the goat realized it had no more horn, or there wasn't enough left of the horn, so it couldn't light up the sky, and it couldn't light up the heavens, and it couldn't bring music, so to speak, mystical music into the air. So the Rebbe said back to the Chassid, "That's why I don't want you to call me Rebbe." It was a very powerful idea, because it was talking about a person that gives and 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 gives until there's nothing left to give, until their self is so depleted that there's not much left of their self. I found over the years of working with many, 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 many women that they are like that Kutzke goat. They are like that Kutzke goat. They give and they give. You give, all of you. All of you women here probably, if you give and 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 you give to all your children. But you're not always so good. Women especially are not always so good at being able to take care of themselves, about being able to be assertive, to be able to carve out into your own life, room for yourself, and your own personal growth, to find a time to learn, to find a time to go to a shir, to find a time to do chesed, to find a time to have fun with your friends, to find a time to enjoy your children, instead of just giving, being a part of this chesed committee and that chesed committee and the other chesed committee. But the importance of taking care of yourself. I can't say enough about self-care. And self-care is not selfish. Self-care is just in the same way that you have an obligation to love your fellow Jew, you also have an obligation to love yourself. You too are a Jew. You too are a Jew, to love yourself. Not in an arrogant way, not in a conceited way, not in a selfish manner, but in a self-care, self-love manner. To see the power of the you. To not lose sight of you. To not lose sight of you. Okay, so that's, you know, so yes, his feelings matter. The importance of focusing on his feelings, and that includes your feelings as well. The you, and the F also stands for family, which we'll talk a little bit about, but we've already spoken a lot about family. But it refers to the focus for today's class. So let's say talk about feelings and the importance of of that feelings matter. And then if somebody has feelings about something, to pay attention to those feelings in your family or in your friends. If you see that one of your friend's feelings were hurt, then, you know, do something about it. Meaning to make amends or acknowledge their pain and validate their pain. I don't remember for this group, I said over the famous story for Moshe Feinstein. My guess is you've heard it probably from other people, but I don't know, maybe you heard it from me too in one of the classes, but I don't think so. the famous story for Moshe Feinstein. Excuse me. Famous story for Moshe Feinstein. I heard this from actually one of the students of Moshe Feinstein. Is that Moshe Feinstein used to walk to Yeshiva every day from his house in the Lower East Side. And Yeshiva with Yeshiva of with MTJ, the Sifter Tiferes Yerushalayim. It was a few blocks away from his house. He used to walk, and a boy would always come to accompany him. A boy from Yeshiva would come to accompany Rabbi Feinstein. Actually, he would pick him up. He would come by car, and then he would walk with Rabbi Feinstein. You know, when it was days when he couldn't, you know, when he couldn't walk, when the weather wasn't, you know, okay, and you know, he would drive him to Yeshiva. Or he would walk with him if that was what it was. But most days he drove him, okay? So the boy would always come to Rabbi Feinstein's house at a certain time in the morning so that he can get to the yeshiva on time to be there for prayer, for the davening. That's what the boy, so it was, again, it was a young boy. So one day, an interesting thing occurred. Every day he would come to Rabbi Feinstein's house. Rabbi Feinstein would usually be ready and have his Gemara in his hand, his Torah, his Talmud in his hand. And he'd be waiting for the boy to pick him up, and they would walk to the car, and he would drive him to yeshiva. That was, you know, that was the routine every day. So this day, something was different. When he came in, he came into Rabbi Feinstein's house, and right when Rabbi Feinstein said, "Okay, I'm ready to go," he picked up his gemara to start walking to go to the door to go to the car. When they got to the door, there was a knock on the door. Rabbi Feinstein opened the door, and standing behind the door was a Russian woman. And again, I apologize if I said this a different time, but I don't believe I said it, but right, it is what it is. It doesn't hurt to hear it again. It's such a beautiful story. And Rabbi Feinstein, when he got to the door, there was a knock on the door. He opens the door, standing behind the door, when he opened the door, was a Russian woman, right? And she says, "In Yiddish, Rabbi Feinstein, can I talk to you for a minute? Can I come in for a minute and talk to you?" So he said, "Certainly." And the boy got a little nervous because they were, you know, knowing there was a, they were on schedule in order, you know, to get to the yeshiva on time. But this, you know, got in the way of that schedule. But, you know, he obviously followed whatever Rabbi Feinstein wanted him to do. So Rabbi Feinstein told the boy to go sit in another room. It wasn't, you know, there was like a den there. So he went to sit in another room, but he was able to hear what was going on. Okay, so the boy was curious, and it was probably a little bit of chutzpah for him to eavesdrop, but I'm kind of glad he did, because this story about Rabbi Feinstein comes to Klai Yisrael, comes to the Jewish people because of him, because of his chutzpah, so to speak. Okay, so he said, so he was sitting in a den, and he was straining his ears to hear what was, you know, what was being said, because he was curious about this Russian woman. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein turns to the woman and says to her in Yiddish, "How can I help you?" Right? And that was the last thing he heard. He was unable to hear anything else from Rabbi Feinstein or from the woman. It was quiet. 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 And this went on for a few minutes, but sounds like at least 5-7 minutes or something like that, enough to make it quite awkward to just sit there quietly. So finally he couldn't contain his curiosity, and he decided that he wants to hear what was going on, so he inched closer to the opening where he could sneak a peek, so to speak, and see what they were talking about, what was going on, what they were talking about, and what was going on. So he put his head around the bend, and it was like quiet, quiet, quiet. He didn't know what was going on. And he looked inside the room, and he saw that she was crying, that the woman was crying silently, like quietly. He was able to see that she was sobbing. She was crying. So then he was curious to see what Rabbi Feinstein's reaction was, because it was total quiet, and she hadn't said anything, right? And he saw that Rabbi Feinstein was crying as well. He was crying and crying and crying and crying, and also together the woman. So he was looking at the woman, she was crying, Rabbi Feinstein was crying, and nobody had really said a word yet, okay? He had said, she said, can I talk to him? And that was it. He said, come in. And this was going on for a long time. Sounds like at least 5-10 minutes. Crying and crying and crying and crying and crying and crying. And he sees that Moshe Feinstein's crying also. Right? Okay. After a number of minutes, he hears the chair scrape the floor as she moves the chair back to get her from the table, and Moshe Feinstein's chair making noise on the floor too, and he moves back. She stands up and says to Rabbi Feinstein in Yiddish, thank you very much, and walks out the door. Rabbi Feinstein pulls himself together, he wipes his face, he dries his eyes, he picks up the Gemara, he tells the boy, new, let's go, we're late. Come, let's go. The boy can't contain himself. On the way to the car, the boy says to Rabbi Feinstein, wow, she was in so much pain. She was crying so much, he said. Why? She was crying. She was crying so much. And Rabbi Feinstein, yes, said yes. And then he said to Rabbi Feinstein, do you know her well? Are you close to her? Do you know what's going on? Why she's in so much pain? And Rabbi Feinstein said, no, I never met her before. This is the first time I ever met her. I don't know who she is. I don't know anything about her. So the boy looked at Rabbi Feinstein and said, if you don't know her and you don't have anything to do with her, why were you crying? Why were you crying? You didn't even know her. You don't know what's going on. Right? Right? So Rabbi Feinstein looked at the boy and said, didn't you see how much pain she was in? How could you not cry? I love this story because it tells us what a gadol used to be Yisrael is, what a giant of the Torah, what a Torah giant is like, what it means to be a Torah giant, is that every person in Klal Yisrael's pain matters to you. Somebody else's pain matters, feelings matter, pain matters, pain matters. And if somebody else is crying, even if you don't know why they're crying, then we need to cry with them. The importance of empathy, the importance of compassion, the importance of being noticed by all them chaveros, and to carry the other person's burden emotionally, to carry enem, to carry the other person. The understanding is a concept in psychology to create that if you're doing therapy with someone, if you're involved in therapy with someone, is to create in your office, or create in the space where you meet the other person who's in tremendous pain, you create what's called a holding environment, holding with an H, a holding environment. Creating a holding environment is to create a space where the person feels safe and the person feels held. No actual physical holding takes place, but emotional holding is what's taking place. And every good parent knows how to do that, even if they're not actually picking their children up. Just by the smile on the face and the look in their eyes and the gentleness of their tone, the gentleness of their words, the gentleness of their tone. The smile, it's so good to see you. When you talk to your children, when you talk to your children, the warmth in your voice holds them no matter where. They could be in Eretz Yisrael and you could be in Brooklyn. It doesn't matter. the holding, the warmth in your voice. It's so good to speak to you, Mamala. It's so good to speak to you, Tatua. You know, what's going on in your life, and I'm so proud of you, and all the words of holding, all the words of love that are involved in the relationship that we have with our children. Okay, so the F, we said, is the focus on the family, and that's really what we're mostly focused on. But then the U and the N is to understand each member of the family. And by understanding them, they feel held as well, then they feel connected to you, and they feel close to you, right? And then the end is noticing. Is noticing little things, noticing every part of them, noticing each child, paying attention to the signs of unhappiness, or paying attention to whether somebody's being bullied in the house. Each member of the family, to focus on each member of the family, to notice each member of the family. You know, that each member of the family matters. And it's so important the emphasis is just taking care of all of you, meaning every member of the family counts. So that means the emphasis on all and the emphasis on you. I mean by that is the emphasis on the whole family, all of the members of the family, and then all of you, meaning you yourself, the person that is hearing this, the mother, the parent, the one that's in other words, back to the idea of self-care, of not losing sight of you, not forgetting about you, you know, being careful about you. When we talk about family, we talk about the importance of creating a sense of family pride and family, like family learning Torah together, or family closeness, or family trips, as we talked about in other parts of this Tiferes series. But noticing the hurt in others, noticing sadness, and not only that, noticing happiness. Catch a child when they're happy, and then make it happier. Enhance the happiness. You know, run with it. Run with it. Tell your children stories about things that happened to you in your life that show Hashkacha Pratas. Find different ways where you could say Hashem loves us. Look what happened. You know, look, we were worried we were going to get there late to the fun place that we were going to, and look, Hashem made it that there wasn't any traffic. Make Hashem real for your children. Make Hashem a real entity. Hashem should be as close as an uncle, or as close as, not going to say as close as a parent, because a child wouldn't be able to wrap their head around that. But as close as a close cousin, or as close, just the idea of every child should hear every day or often that Mommy and Tati love you and Hashem loves you too. Mommy and Tati love you and Hashem loves you too. And Hashem loves you too. I don't remember if I said for this group, I'm sorry, I speak a lot. I don't remember if I said for this group that when I was in grade, I was abused verbally by a teacher that I had, by a Rebbe that I had. He used to call me names, and the name that he used to like to call me the most was idiot. It did tremendous damage to my self-esteem for a long time. For a long, 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 long time. Many years. Until I got past it. Until I grow past it. And probably the people that have really helped me get past it is that I had beautiful, wonderful Rabbeim for many years in different places. I had a beautiful Satma Chassid Rebbe in ninth grade, who I thought I wouldn't be able to relate to because I grew up in a Zionist house and he was anti-Zionist. He was Satma. And, you know, and I wore a bobby pin in my yarmulke at that time. Like this was many years ago when I was in, this is ninth grade in Taravadas in Brooklyn. And I had this Rebbe who I didn't think I would be able to relate to because he was Hasidish and I wasn't. And I was also burned out from my band because of this Rebbe who I had again. So, but the beauty of it was that he was able to get past that. He saw me, he may have been one of my first teachers that saw the true me inside. He saw what he thought was a good boy, and he saw what he thought was a smart boy, and he loved me, and everything changed. My life changed. My life changed because of that. It was so important. It was so important to go through that for me, because, you know, from there I grew, and from there I understood, you know, the power of a Rebbe. And from that I began to extrapolate to the power of a parent as well. The importance that a parent has, the power that a parent has in terms of creating self-esteem in their children, to catch a child doing something good, and to build their self-esteem with that. I cannot say enough about the importance of self-esteem. Dr. Abraham Tversky likes to tell a story. He's an amazing person. Dr. Abraham Tversky liked to tell a story in which he would say, he once came to a school that I was teaching in, and he talked about self-esteem. And he said about the importance of self-esteem. I don't know if you know any of the writing of Dr. Abraham Tversky. My guess is you do. But I think at this point he's written over 80 books. And he said most of the overwhelming majority of the theme, the main theme of each of those books has to do with the importance of self-esteem. Because it could change the way that your children live. That they feel good about themselves, not in an arrogant way, but they just feel good about themselves. They're proud of themselves. Not, again, not in an arrogant way, not that they put other people down, not that they say I'm smart and you're not, but just they feel okay about themselves, that they feel okay, that they feel loved, they feel a sense of security, that they feel like they're not alone in this world. They feel that they're not alone in this world. Their parents have their back, so to speak, that they're not alone. A sense of security, a sense of feeling close to the people in my life. The importance of all these things. The importance of all these things. Okay, back to fun. Now, we're talking about serious things, but don't lose sight of fun. Fun itself, what the word means. A sense of simcha, a sense of happiness, a sense of enjoyment, a sense of enjoying each other's company. You know, make every day fun. Make every day fun. I think in the Tversky, this is not from Dr. Abraham Tversky. Oh, I didn't finish that story. So anyway, Dr. Abraham Tversky is this world-renowned expert on self-esteem. And he said, the problem is, you know, I don't really have self-esteem myself, which shocked all of the people. There were probably 400 people in the room when I heard him say that, and people were shocked. And then he said the following story. He said, I'm going to make a prediction now. He said, I'm not a Navi, I'm not a prophet, but I'm going to make a prediction. In around a half an hour from now, I'm going to be finished giving this speech. It was a speech on self-esteem. Let me tell you what's going to happen in about a half an hour now when I'm finished. I'm going to finish the speech, then I'm going to go out into the hallway, and then probably, he looked around the room, he said, around 300-400 people here, probably around 100 people are going to surround me, maybe more. But that happens every time I speak. Right? That's what he said, like that. And then he said, so people are going to surround me, you know, and give me lots of compliments. And then and he said, but then, one yidola, like one, you know, I don't know, one yidola, like one young Jewish man or one older Jewish man, whatever, one yidola, one little yidola, is going to come over to me and ask me a question that will somehow infer or imply that he didn't agree with something that I said. That's what he said. He said, and I will go home today a mess, M-E-S-S, which was powerful. Everybody knew it was total quiet when he said that, and then people started laughing. They thought he was joking. And he said, I'm not joking. He said, I've written all these books throughout self-esteem. I speak all over the place. And yet, I don't have any self-esteem myself. I've always been hard on myself, and therefore I don't give myself any. He says, I don't want you to learn from me. I know it's not healthy, but at this point I can't really help it. I don't really have good self-esteem. So it's important for all of us to remember, you know, that even a great man like Rabbi Dr. Abraham Tversky has self-esteem issues. And I can't tell you enough that, you know, the people that can instill self-esteem most in the life of a human being is the parents. You know, a good teacher could do it too, right? And a good teacher has that power as well. But probably the most important are the most important people in the life of a child, and that's mommy and tati. the parents. The parents have that, you know, that smile. And I would walk home, when I would come home from school and I would see my father, his face would light up. And I remember, as I said to you a few minutes ago, my father was a Holocaust survivor. So he never expected to see children or grandchildren because he didn't expect to survive. And when the first Anika was born to him, you know, one of my children, when my oldest child was born, that Anika was, you know, just, you know, was a god, so to speak. So, okay, so be wrapping up. Okay, feelings matter, understanding matters, noticing matters. Noticing means being careful. The end is noticing. Noticing if someone in the room, if one of the members of the family is feeling hurt. It's so important to notice. I can't say enough of that because it's not always so clear. And you have to be on the lookout. The end is noticing and not, noticing the look. Noticing when you're speaking to your spouse, if you say something in a sharp way, notice the look in their eye. Catch it then and say, I'm sorry. Say, since you said that, that was a little too sharp. Or you have your kid, that annoying one, the one that you really annoys you like crazy, never does what you want her to do, or never does what you want him to do. To notice it and do something about it and catch it before it goes on and on and on. Catch it. Okay, so I think I'm going to stop here. I think that's a good place to stop. So again, let's just review quickly. Fun could stand for fighting unhappiness and negativity, and you do that with fun, with joy, with simcha in your family. Fun also stands for feelings matter. And the importance of fighting the unhappiness as well. Feelings matter. And then the U is understanding matters, meaning understanding each of your children and understanding each of your friends really matters in terms of the relationship, in terms of their own self-esteem, helping them build, feeling good about themselves. And that is part of the job of parents, is to build children with self-esteem to the best of your ability. Okay, I think we did everything, so I want to wish you all Hatzlacha Rabbah. I want to remind you again to, if you have a chance, to say a Kapitul Tehillim for Yitzchak Moshe Ben Carol. Thank you very much.